wasn't much going on. I did a pretty broad sweep. A lot of it is just like basic partnerships, and at a certain point that gets kind of boring to talk about because it's just over and over again. And I know there's been so many companies offering wagering solutions for esports betting, and there's so many that are like collaborating and just bringing it up, and that's mostly what we have to talk about today. Even though that's kind of getting old hat too, like it's just kind of the same stuff regurgitating over and over again, because I feel like, as we've talked about before, esports is at such a weird spot right now. It's still so young, nobody knows what to do with it, and it's in a massive transition period. Well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is directly, you know, where we started 3.5 years ago when we started the Casino Esport Conference, was seeing the conversion between, or the collision between esports and the gambling world. And of course, there's going to be, because it's a young industry, you know, everyone's going to rush to whatever the biggest, you know, going out of business sale is. So everyone's going to, you know, okay, so now it's wagering on esports, and for good reason, because I mean, what the hell else is there to wager on? NASCAR, I think recently started having actual races, and they had them in their stadium, but there were no people in there. So they are actually having races.
Did you see, they're having sports competitions in, I think it has to be Japan, and they were filling up the stadiums with, like, Pokemon plushies, like, stuffed animals. That was funny.
Yeah. So almost like, you know, it's like a lot of the industries and sports leagues are, like, looking at it like, you know, coronavirus is so sad, so depressing.
Yes.
In the ass, let's just make fun of it, or let's have fun with it while we can. And I so agree. I guess in the light of, you know, in the sort of cheek and tongue, you know, and anime type style, the
Japan just loves their cartoons,
right?
They love cute stuff,
of course, and it's cute and it's fun, and it's like, It's you know, instead of having nothing in the stands, which is kind of depressing.
Like did you see the UFC fights? I think it was UFC. The no cheering or anything, and it was just like, it's almost like morbid.
It is. It's
like
really
watching
weird.
A sports game without the energy of the crowd is like really weird.
It is. It's so odd. But these are very, 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 very odd times in our as I've said, I think, on this podcast and to friends and stuff, no one that I know that's alive today has ever experienced anything like this. Even during the major flu pandemic of 1918, they still had baseball games and people wore masks. They didn't know about social distancing.
Yeah, they couldn't like track the numbers either as well.
Right, and they couldn't track the numbers. So what they didn't know, kind of, they were ignorant in a lot of ways, so it didn't make a difference to them. But, you know, it's a very odd, very strange time. I mean, you know, I live in New Jersey. My girlfriend lives in Connecticut. I can get there. It usually would take me an hour because of traffic. It takes me 40 minutes, which is weird because there's nobody on the road.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then the summertime, it's even making it more strange because, you know, this is the time of year where, you know, you'd have E3, and we don't even know if that's coming back.
I think E3 is done.
Yeah, that might be done.
PlayStation had pulled out last year, so I can't imagine.
I think South by Southwest was, you know, all of these major, you know, video gaming conferences have now been canceled. So, you know, you question whether or not, you know, what's the future? How is this going to be, you know, dealt with? I mean, overall, the only thing that's happening is online esports competitions, and I've seen them on ESPN with NBA 2K. I've seen a lot of opportunities, you know, happening, and they're making the best of what they have. And by making the best of what they have, they're setting up their situation so that they can also benefit it from a wagering perspective. Because, you know, I mean, New Jersey's actually done a very good job of having an online presence, not just only in now their sports wagering or esports wagering, but also with online gaming.
I'm sorry, who has?
Atlantic City.
Oh, New yes, Jersey. Okay.
So they've kept their casinos open. Well, not open, they're closed. But they've kept them alive because they have online casinos.
Yeah.
Now, if they had esports too, which it they kind of do, but it's like not, it's not like full throttle.
Yeah.
They have sports betting, but it's not full throttle yet. And there's a lot of, and now everyone's creating these, like you said, all these wagering apps because, and wagering websites because for esports. And it's because there is just a lot that has to be sort of like muddled through.
And that's what it seems like everybody's kind of taking care of now. It's like, all right, there's nothing else to focus on. Let's start building this up.
Right. And also it's a smart move from an investor standpoint because, listen, there may be like 100 different esports wagering sites at the end of the day, but only X amount are going to be able to survive. And yes. That's the same situation with, you know, it's almost becomes a copy of the esports industry itself.
Yes.
So there were esports teams 2-3 years ago that don't exist today. And that's because everybody was rushing to have an esports team. Everyone was rushing to create a league. And certain leagues and certain teams have just faded away.
Yes.
But that's what happens when there's a gold rush. It's what happens when, you know, everybody thinks that they're on the right track to making a lot of money, which is, you know, something I wanted to point out about today, and that is that esports in its own regard is, even though it's still the Wild West and it's still not 100% it's not 100% there yet, I'm a little saddened by the fact that esports is not so much from that grassroots place anymore. It's like a business now. Everyone's looking at it.
Full corporate business.
Yeah, like a full corporate business. And that, you know, in a lot of ways, it's sad for me because, I mean, I started GamerCon, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. We started doing tournaments there. And I like doing the tournaments for the fun of it. And I like doing it because I like to see the competition. There's passion there. There's still passion there, but it's, you know, that passion gets cornered by corporate America, by corporations and businesses that when they see they have the ability to make money, it's like, let's cash in and find the next big thing.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we can, you know, put our cash in our bank and, you know, listen, nothing wrong with making money. I just kind of feel like in a lot of ways I'll miss the days that, you know, where people would just get together and have a tournament and, you know, donate to the prize pool and see who wins. I mean, you know, I worked with local TOs like Johnny Van Dyne, who did, you know, the Smash community. And I worked with Smash communities out in California, from Anaheim and Las Vegas, and then, you know, there's the street fighting community that also came out, and you know, I'll never forget those tournaments because they were fun, and they were down to earth, and they were just like grassroots, and there wasn't all the flash and everything. It was just something that was really cool,
yeah,
and it was a lot of fun to do, and everyone had a good time. It was a relaxing kind of an experience, and it just happened. You know, we got together and it just happened. And you know, that's something I think that, you know, those days are like sort of fading into the background as we keep moving forward with esports, especially today, because, you know, it's the only thing that anyone has to wager on. And those people who wanted to bet on regular sports, you know, I feel bad for them, the fact that they can't, you know, go to a baseball game, or they can't go to a basketball game.
Me too, because people truly love it and they don't have it right now, and that
yeah
sucks.
It's like, it's got to be very difficult for the fans of conventional sports. I mean,
but on the flip side of that, like, everybody's losing things. Like, I love conventions more than anything, and I haven't been able to go to them, and
yeah,
just, I mean, you live without the loss.
I mean, yeah, the loss is
you live with the loss.
I mean, in a way, the loss is a really hard pill to swallow. I mean, even for cosplayers. I mean, the whole point of a cosplayer is to go to an event to show their cosplay.
Yeah.
And if they can't do that, it's like, you know.
But at least they have, like, social media where they can post pictures, do photo shoots. Like, to your point, with the traditional sports, there's no substitute for it.
No, there is no substitute for it. You know, and the next generation of entertainment is much more digital. So we can access everything through social media or online.
Yeah, well, that's why even the main sports organizations are going towards their simulation version, just to give you something.
Right, and I think that's the right move. It's definitely going to help keep people engaged. But, you know, when everything does come back, and I hope one day that it does, I believe that because of the pandemic, it will be much more appreciated.
Yeah.
You know, people be like, wow, you know, I had this was taken away from me and now it's back. And I really, really enjoyed this, you know. And so I think in overall, we learn lessons. We take things for granted when they're here all the time.
Yeah.
Then when they're not here, we realize how much we really love them and how we really miss them. And then those things will eventually come back. But, you know, missing things is all part of, you know, building that fan base. And, you know, speaking about fan bases, you know, in regard to, like, you know, the early days of esports, and the you know, the numbers that were being promoted and projected by Newzoo and other statistical companies that were tracking esports viewership or fans of esports. Apparently, that wasn't exactly, you know, legitimate, according to the way that viewership is measured.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, I you know, when we were running GameCon events and doing tournaments in those events, and we were streaming them, our numbers got pretty good, but they were nowhere near some of the numbers that were, you know, publicized about, like, the League of Legends and how, or was that Overwatch? Or maybe it was League of Legends.
They reference lots of things in here. Saying League of Legends World Championships was bigger than the Super Bowl. But
the what? Super
Bowl. Well, it really? Says the Super Bowl is measured by the average audience, and League of Legends is measured by unique viewers, which is a totally different metric, therefore not directly comparable. And to give some clarity around that, like, that's why the third article that I have here is, it says why esports lacks unified viewership measure or metrics is because they're all measuring different forms of viewership. They're checking either unique viewers, which is measures of how many different people tuned in at any point of the program and how long they watched. They have peak concurrent users, which is peak concurrent users refers to highlight or the highest number of people tuning in at the same time during a broadcast. And then the third way that they can measure it is hours watched, which is obviously measuring the hours actually watched by people on the broadcast. And whatever one looks better, that's what they're showing. So it's not even like that they're fake numbers, but they're just different versions of the same numbers and leveraged to which one's highest. And that's why there needs to be more consistency on what they're actually measuring.
Right. When the statistics came out in 2017, 2016, you know, I'd look at those numbers and I go, okay, they may be true, but they're not numbers that would really represent the actual amount of people that are actually viewing.
And I think the point is, like, what is the actual way to measure it?
Well, that's why there needs to be, in the article it says there needs to be a third party that you know, like Nielsen rating, like, you know, that basically will rate and measure viewership across all the games, because, you know, it, and this goes back to what I always say, you really cannot compare conventional sports to esports. It's a very, very different animal. Everything from the ground up is brand new and very different. It's not the same as conventional sports. We can't take, you know, how many people watch the Super Bowl and then take that number and then compare it to, you know, a legal championship series. You just can't do it.
And honestly, the viewership is spread across so many different platforms. How could you even tell? Like, it is so hard to gather all that data and measure it.
Right. Are you grouping, you know, esports as a whole? compared to the Super Bowl or football. That's not, you can't even, that doesn't, you shouldn't even say that in the same sentence. You know, I mean, you can't say all esports, because all of esports is very different. Each community is very unique.
Well, that's a note I made for myself for this podcast, because I was thinking about everything I was reading, and my opinion is to just stop talking about esports and stop talking and calling it esports and just start focusing on particular games. It's almost irrelevant to lump it all together. It's all entertainment, and it's all different.
I 100% agree with you. It's like if I said, oh, well, here are all the numbers for conventional sports, and under that umbrella, me calling it conventional sports, is every conventional sport. Hockey, car racing,
golfing,
baseball, basketball, football, everything that's, you know, every physical sport that people watch. You know, you can't do that.
Tennis. It's,
you know, each one of those games in a conventional setting, baseball has its own community, has its own fans. Football has its own community, has its own fans. Yes, there's crossover between the two, but that's a similar thing in esports as well. You know, you might find a Smash player that's also likes Street Fighter. I mean, it's not, and that might be a fan of Street Fighter, and that belongs to the fighting game community.
Yeah.
So there is, you know, there are other sub, you know, and the way that it's talked about in articles and in the news about esports, it really misleads the reader, because they don't understand the intricacies of this industry. It's very, very different.
Yeah.
You can't, and you know, and I can understand, you know, they have a certain readership. So let's say there's a news article in the business section of the New York Times. Now they have to write the article so that the business people understand it, or at least try to understand it. And then let's say they write something in the sports section, which isn't really common, because, you know, I've never seen an article about the esports in the sports section, because esports is really entertainment. So they may have that one right, but it is also competitive. And a lot of things that people don't really understand is that esports is only 10% of the video gaming industry.
Yes.
There's an entire other world that, you know, no one ever talks about. And that's the entertainment side. And first and foremost,
you can't bet on that.
Well, no, you can't bet on that. So it's probably, you know, no, people don't think about it as, you know, regards to money. But here's the other thing. Think of video gaming world as the beginnings of, like, the movie industry. So there were movies that came out that people loved and that people became big fans of. It's a similar thing in video gaming. I actually compare the movie industry and the music industry to video gaming than I would to the sports industry.
Yeah, because it is really just, well, depending on what it is, it's interactive storytelling.
Right, so it's interactive storytelling, it's immersive experiences.
There's competitive games, and then there's interactive storytelling.
Right, and then there's just escapism.
Yeah. I mean,
ways to just escape.
Puzzle games, whatever.
Right, so there's like, so the genre is so wide, is so different, and then there's that esports side that everyone talks about, and everyone has to realize it's 10%. I mean, it might be a little more now, but actually, I don't know. I don't think so, because there are only certain games that are becoming the staples in esports, and that is, you know, you hear about Rocket League, League of Legends, you hear about the same games over and over again.
Yeah,
I mean, Epic just recently came out with a new game. It's on the tip of my tongue. I think it starts with a V. But anyway,
Valorant? Is it Epic?
Valorant. Is that not? That's not Epic, is it?
No, that's Riot.
Riot, right. So Valorant just recently came out, which is great, because I like to see new esports games. I like to see new competitive games. I think it keeps the industry fresh, or that 10% very fresh.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And it also keeps the other games that are out there that have fan bases to reach out to those fan bases again and create more intensity with different modifications, skins, you know, weapons, you know, maps, whatever it is.
It keeps them innovating.
Right. It keeps that innovation moving forward. And I think that's great. I think, you know, you have Call of Duty, for example. Call of Duty is actually one of the, one of the older esports competitive games, and it does have an older crowd that play it. But you know, where are they going to go with that? And you know, that community, how do they scale that community? You know, in the business world, they always talk about scale. How do you scale a game that has a base of fan base, that has this older crowd? How do you scale it so that you can get more fans to it? Well, the answer from Blizzard Activision is, or Activision Blizzard, sorry, is let's have a Call of Duty League. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but I mean, in your opinion, have you heard anything about how well that league's doing?
I know that it had a rocky start, but I haven't heard anything negative about it. I think that it's doing all right, and I think that the fans are already kind of built in from probably 15 plus years of Call of Duty games being out now. So,
But how do we expand that? What I'm saying is, how does Activision Blizzard expand their fan base with that game? You see, it's like,
I don't know that they are expanding their fan base with that game. I think if anything, they expanded their fan base with additional game modes like Warzone, the free battle royale. I think that's how they're reaching out to like the fan base, whereas I think that the competitive league was just so that it could be competitive and be its own thing.
Right.
Cuz no one was really taking Call of Duty that seriously.
Right, and recently we have a series of interviews, Zoom interviews that are pre-recorded called Level Up for the CEC, or with the CEC. And I did a recent interview with a lawyer out in San Francisco in the Bay Area, and she, I brought the topic up about. How, you know, I've spoke about the three, I call them the Holy Trinity for publishers. And that is the release of the game that everyone can play, the esports version of the game, which is something that stays pretty much the same, doesn't get modified for at least a year or two. And it gives the ability for the players to practice and comes consistently really, really good, and that would then rise to the occasion. What is the best team, most dominant team? So if you're not changing them, you know, every 6 months or every 3 months, the actual game itself, then the team is just practicing that game as it is. And then the last version would be for the publishers to create a 21 and older or 18 years or older competitive game that could be modified, and obviously for mature audiences only, that could be modified for gambling purposes. And, you know, she said to me that the publishers are very interested and they're getting closer and closer to that table to start working with the gambling industry. So the CEC is definitely something that started 3 years ago, but it was on the right track, and how the collision is continuously happening now with more wagering sites, now with there being absolutely no other conventional sports available. You know, we're now moving into a very interesting, place. And with older people also playing video games, I think that gives them an opportunity to do something exciting with that game, something you've been playing your whole life as you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually go to a casino and play with it play that game for money.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, a casino definitely needs the crowds. They need those people. They need the next generation because, you know, the older people are not even around anymore to play the slot games. Especially now after coronavirus has pretty much sadly wiped a lot of them out, unfortunately. But, you know, You the younger crowds need to start coming to the casino. The casino needs to give them what they want. And what they want is to play games that they played when they were younger. And that means more peer-to-peer. That means more challenging ways to create different algorithms in games that are, you know, where you can engage a customer to win money. And I think it's happening. It's happening.
You do think it's happening?
Oh yeah, it's going to happen sooner than you think. I know a lot of games that are being released and that are already on the floor in some Indian reservation casinos, like Soul Calibur. Soul Calibur is, I'm not sure where, but I know that it's on trial run right now. It's produced by a company called Gameco.
That's cool, but, yeah.
But they're working with Bandai Namco, right? That's the company that makes it, right?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. Anyway.
Who makes Soul Calibur?
Yeah.
You think I would know, but I actually don't. Let me look it up.
I'm pretty sure it's Soul Calibur, but...
Their developer is Project Soul.
Project Soul, but the publisher is...
The publisher is Bandai Namco.
Yeah, right. Bandai Namco. So, anyway, so they're... So, publisher... and Bandai also does Street Fighter, I believe.
I think Capcom does Street Fighter.
Right, no, Capcom, sorry. So, anyway, so Capcom also... I mean, all these companies, you're going to see Capcom, you're going to see... companies like Bandai, you're going to see Taito Games. Taito, you know, is an older publisher. You know, they've done games like, you know, Acronoid or Acronid, whatever, Missile Command. They have a game called, well, Asteroids is a Taito game, I believe. Or no, is that Atari? But anyway, all these companies are basically building or reestablishing their games to be gambling or gamblifying their games. And then there's going to be a call for more video game competitive and non-competitive games where you can either the computer's going to challenge you or you're going to have to be you're playing another person. And you're going to be winning money, or maybe you won't be winning money. Maybe you'll be in a competition to win a car or at a casino, or maybe you're going to be able to win a skin or skins in a game to get better. But again, that's that third part of the same game that's played, you know, by the esport professionals and then also by everyone, you know, all of the... But it's the same game, but it's a different type, a different version. Because, you know, the publishers have to grow their brand. They have to... And why would they leave that out as part of the equation? It's only more money for them. So I believe that you're going to see that in the very, very near future. And I'm not talking about 2 years. I'm talking within the next maybe...
Six to eight months
once coronavirus... Well, if we can get coronavirus under control...
I don't know. It's spiking in Florida.
It's spiking a lot of different places, but, you know, I mean, we'll see.
We don't know.
I mean, maybe they'll just have herd immunity and things will go back to the way they need to be. And everyone will be so thankful that they can actually walk into a supermarket without a mask on. But I mean, these are different and strange times. And a lot of things are happening that, you know, whenever weird things happen like this, whenever catastrophes happen, something always better comes about. I mean, that happened after Hurricane Sandy, for example. I mean, it wiped out large parts of Long Island. But yeah. Long Island rebuilt, and it's as beautiful, more beautiful now than it was before Sandy. Same thing happened in parts of the Jersey Shore. Sandy came, wiped out certain parts of the Jersey Shore. They rebuilt it. It's nicer than it ever was. Coronavirus has come and is completely, basically held everybody hostage. Disappointed everybody, hurt everybody. Everybody is being affected by it. It doesn't matter who you are.
Well, now's the time for strategy and change moving forward.
So everyone is pivoting. It just, you know, you can't pivot. Bigger companies can't pivot as big as the smaller companies can. But if the smaller companies can with a little bit of capital, those are going to be the winners in 6 to 8 months from now. Because as they pivot, their value is going to grow because they know people are going to have this in the back of their minds that they can always have video gaming as a way of escapism, as a way of entertainment, as a way to just pass the hours if you're stuck in quarantine again, which possibly could. So let's hope that it doesn't happen. Let's hope that, you know, we can all be together again, because that would really be the benefit to all of us, because this, that is our human nature, to actually be in physical presence of one another.
It's true.
It's very, very difficult, like, not to have, not to go visit your family because you don't know where they've been.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so odd, you know, that it's a foreign thing. You know, there are a lot of grandparents out there, for example, that are missing their grandchildren because they can't. So it's a very odd time, but I really do believe that with odd things, and when things happen, they happen for a reason, and usually that reason turns out to be something more delightful than they ever thought it could be.